Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Chris Buchanani. Chris, how was your Father's Day weekend, sir?
Oh, very nice, very relaxing. Yeah, good stuff. The weather's about to get super hot here in Happy Valley, but it's summertime, so I don't mind that. We got plenty of cold. I'm happy to get a little bit of warm weather.
I am happy with the warm weather. I say, Chris, the rule of thumb is you can't complain about the hot weather and complain about the cold weather. Not allowed.
If you, I'm with you. I think Jim, hypocrisy is, just missed the cut for the Bill of Rights for all Americans. But no, I'm with you. I try to be consistent on this stuff.
All right. Well, let's turn our attention to some Penn State football. And Chris, anyone who listens to our show regularly knows that we have our Ask segments, Ask T. Frank, Ask Andy. Perhaps we should expand that also to Ask Landon and Ask Chris, because oftentimes even we get sent questions and they'll say, oh, ask Landon this or ask Chris this. But we got a question in to Ask Andy from our buddy Steve from Potomac. And what I'm saying is, if you're a regular listener, you know you've heard questions from Steve from Potomac. Steve is not James Franklin's biggest fan. And separately from his question, he sent me a note, said he would want your take on this thing, okay, on his question. So fair enough. I think I'm actually going to expand it. I want to give you Steve's question in full, then, because I think it just opens up so many conversations, Chris, I then want to get to that point, get to the conversation on it. So here we go. Thanks to Steve from Potomac. Here's his question. Enjoyed your prior discussion on what's holding Penn State back from winning a national championship. Curious as to how you would distribute the percentages between the institution, meaning like NIL money, the alignment, so on, and the individual. The individual is James Franklin. Surprise, surprise, here's how Steve has it split up. I would have it 25% blame for the institution and 75% for Franklin. You're all good at defending James Franklin for his off-field responsibilities. However, as fans, what we see is 10 years of poor performance from big game James to the point where Penn State has not even been competitive in the recent meetings with Ohio State and Michigan. While I agree with you, Jim, that Michigan will likely take a step back with the departure of Harbaugh, that doesn't make me feel any better about Penn State's chances of winning a playoff game, even if they make it. My fear is that Franklin fatigue is causing donors to question their return on investment, or lack thereof, and that Penn State will continue to fall further behind from national championship contention until a new coach comes, ideally someone who could unify the fan base over how poorly Joe Paterno was treated by the administration. All right, Chris, there's a whole lot there. First of all, just your overview on Steve's question.
The first thing I want to say, and I'm not saying this to kiss up, especially because my answer is probably not going to please him overall. I think the question is framed very well in that he hits on some key points. I don't know how you can watch the performance in the big games that he talks about, or really just kind of the in-game coaching aspect of James Franklin's tenure, and come away without being net critical. Now, I've said on some other venues over the last few years that as somebody who has been hypercritical of James on his clock management in particular and the in-game coaching decisions more broadly, I think there has been some market improvement there over the last two seasons. And what have we seen the last 2 years that we didn't see from James in the first eight? Another place where I was happy to hit him when it was deserved. He's not losing games that he shouldn't. There's not that one game on the schedule where you just kind of smack yourself in the face as we get to the final score. So, I mean, I do think there's been some growth and improvement there, but nevertheless, that's a fair point of criticism. I do think that, an inability to unify some of the lingering divides in the fan base and just understanding how to speak to our donor booster population has been a big issue for James. And I do think donor fatigue and just in general, the question of ROI, return on investment, is a major obstacle for Penn State. But I would argue that's maybe not a failing of James Franklin so much as it's something that I would compliment our fans and our boosters for, in that Penn Staters are just too smart to fall for the scam that is the current model of college football, where we say, well, folks, the society, I guess, at large, and the courts in particular, are deciding that we now finally have to pay our players. So guess what, everybody? It's your responsibility. So pony up, even as we watch like billions of dollars flow into the conference via media rights deals. So, you know, we see some places where the money gets pumped in on an annual basis, like let's just take Miami or Texas A&M as examples, and there's absolutely no ROI, and yet people continue to, you know, shovel more and more piles of money into the furnace. I just think, for good or ill, in terms of the on-field result, our fans and our boosters and our donors, they're too smart for that. But yeah, the question's framed very well.
And I think, though, I'll take a little bit of the opposite perspective on that, about how it's framed, because a lot of these questions that he puts out, they're a very good topic to discuss, but you can tell the angle they're framed from. For example, the first question is, he's looking to blame somebody for where Penn State is. I think someone with the glass half full would be saying, who deserves the credit for where they are? Mm-hmm. Now, are they where Ohio State is? No. Or Georgia, or Alabama, or Michigan over the last couple of years? No, they are not. But I would say 95% of the schools out there wish they were where Penn State is right now, Chris.
Yeah, and I think some of this goes back to lingering, deep-seated feelings among the fans going back 20 years almost. I wrote about this in one of my For the Bloggy columns last fall. You can read them every Friday during football season at ForTheBloggy.com, where I think there is this mentality among the fan base that you go all the way back to the turn of the century when Joe was having some rough years. In fact, he had a stretch of 4 losing seasons in 5 years that I think only one man at one school in the entire country could have survived. And the reason why was that he had a track record of being one of the best in the profession. He had an unbelievable amount of goodwill banked from not just all the winning, but all the philanthropy, everything that was special about Joe and his relationship to Penn State as a university. And, you know, thankfully for him and for us, he engineered a great turnaround, and we had a lot of good years after that rough stretch. But there were still some like clunkers in there even after the Big Ten title year of 2005. And I think people were willing to tolerate that because it was Joe. There was a sense that, like, yeah, of course, we've got a coach who's getting into his 80s. You know, you're a fool if you believe this guy is just as sharp as he ever was. And you're a fool if you think that he's not being outworked by people who are literally half his age around the country. But we were willing to tolerate maybe one or two more losses than you normally would have had with just generic college football head coach, because it was Joe Paterno. We knew that was a precious thing that was only going to last for a certain number more of years. So going back a long time, there's been this sense in the fan base that Penn State is a little bit of a sleeping giant. And okay, when Joe finally retires, then it will be time to make the big hire and wake up the giant. Then the scandal happens, and again, that gratification gets deferred. It's a sense of like, well, okay, for the first couple of years, we're just happy to still have a program. We're happy to be able to be doing as well as we are, where if, you know, Bill O'Brien or James Franklin wins 7 games, it's like, we're happy to have those 7 wins because at least it's a winning record. And okay, we just need to build back up, and eventually we'll get this thing going back in the right direction and we'll wake up the sleeping giant. And so then when we win the Big Ten title in 2016, and it looks like 2017 is going to be a playoff team, again, it's the feeling of like, okay, finally, we're at that point we've been thinking of since like 2002. This is my, the point is that psychologically, this fan base in their own minds has been deferring gratification for practically 25 years at this point. And, you know, that leads to a sense of when you're going 10-2 and losing to Michigan and Ohio State, when there was expectation that you could contend for a playoff spot or a national championship, that hits different than if there hadn't been 20 years of simmering frustration banked leading up to it. So that leads you to frame the question of who's to blame versus who's to credit. If you're at, you know, Utah or Wisconsin or, you know, Baylor, someplace where there's not been this history of success and a legacy of expectations, then yeah, you look at that entirely different. But expectations are everything. And at Penn State, the expectation has been for a very long time that we are on the cusp of, to use James Franklin's term, elite status. And so when you've been that close for that long and you haven't got there, credit turns into blame.
All right, let's frame this the way Steve did. Who is to blame for Penn State not taking that next step? He wants to, he frames it as the Institute versus James Franklin, and essentially, you know, how much is it the head coach and how much is it everything else?
Well, let's start with this. What would Harry Truman say, Jim?
I know. Where does the buck stop?
Yeah. Well, I think his point was, as president of the United States, the buck stops with him. Well, in college football, the buck stops with the head coach. That's why they get all the, you know, attention. That's why they get all the money. So, yeah, I do think James owns a not insignificant amount of the credit, both for the successes and for the failures. If I was going to break it down, and we can get into this in the next segment, I'm sure. In my mind, I've got it about 35% James, 60% broadly to the institution, going back to the way Steve framed the question, and 5% is luck. I know nobody wants to hear that, but man, like in sports, especially in college sports, some of it is just luck, the way the cookie crumbles. So that, and you're always going to have to work around that.
And I would actually put more on luck just in all of sports. You know, luck is more than 5% because the difference between victory and defeat, and we can go in another day into the different sports. In baseball, you win 108 games and then you lose 2 out of 3 come the playoff time, and to a team that went had 84 wins. Chris, we will pick that up right after this break.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galanti. This is quarter number two of our show. We are reacting to a question from one of our great listeners, Steve from Potomac, who was talking about Penn State in general, where the program is and what's keeping it from getting to that next level. And a little bit, Chris, I feel like I'm playing devil's advocate towards Steve here. And I've find myself in this position often because we get questions like this often. Why does Penn State not beat Ohio State? Well, you want to know the first reason why, Chris? Look at the recruit rankings every single year. Mm-hmm. Ohio State is like first or second every year. Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia are always top 3, 4, 5 worst case scenario. they bring in the most talent. Now, you might ask the question, perhaps it's a fair question, why does Penn State not appear in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Okay. And that's a fair question and another issue. But the fact is, other than those three programs, everybody else starts out as at least an underdog talent-wise, Chris, compared to those three teams.
Yeah, no question. And look, you know, by and large, those are the teams winning the national championships.
Yes, they win the national championships mostly because, in my feeling, because they have the most talent. Now, I think it's cherry picking a little bit, but I'll allow it. Michigan, and give them lots of credit for what they've done over the last 3 years, yeah, being able to beat Ohio State when they aren't a top five recruiting class. And the question will be, well, Jim Harbaugh was able to do it. How come our coach can't do it? Well, I'll also ask, how come there are 99 other coaches, Chris, who can't do what Jim Harbaugh did? I think if you're not at least conceding that Ohio State comes into the game every year with much more talent than Penn State, you are missing out on some perspective on this conversation.
Yeah, that's fair. And to the Michigan point, and listen, I don't want to relitigate all the Connor Stallion stuff. Certainly, I'm aware of it, and probably we're going to learn more stuff long down the line. I would not be shocked to learn that Michigan was getting a substantial advantage as a result of all of that, because, again, you can only stretch coincidence so far when you match up the timeline of when all the Connor Stallion's Spygate stuff started and when Michigan experienced this remarkable turnaround in on-field results. The fact that the Venn diagram is a circle, it's hard for me to buy that there's absolutely no connection between those two things, right? That being said, on top of that, very clearly, like, Jim Harbaugh is a great football coach. Whatever else you want to say about the guy, up to and including the fact that he is potentially an alleged serial killer, the man knows how to alleged now. I'm just asking questions. The man knows how to coach football. Everywhere he has gone, you know, from San Diego to Stanford to the San Francisco 49ers, now to Michigan, there's been an immediate uptick in results. And so I give the guy a lot of credit that he can coach the hell out of the game of football. And he knows how he wants to win and the type of players he needs to win with and how to coach him up. I do think that he's the exception that proves the rule in that regard. So the idea of, like, well, where is our Jim Harbaugh? We just need to go get him. That is much, much, much easier said than done. And I think for every Jim Harbaugh or Kirby Smart, you know, you see a lot more Brady Hokes or Scott Frosts out there. So I that's why, just going back to the question of Franklin and should you say who's to blame or who do we credit, I'm very slow to pull the trigger because I understand that being able to thread the needle in the way that Michigan just did, and again, maybe we'll go back and history will record that they did it by breaking the rules, but doing what they did with or without cheating is very difficult.
And, you know, going back to what you called 5% luck as part of the equation, and I think it could be even more, I'll look at two programs from the old Pac-12 conference, Oregon and Washington. Washington had a magical season last year, just magical. Everything in place. I give the coach a lot of credit. Michael Penix, I'll give a lot of credit. But if you're an Oregon fan and you say, we went 0-2 against Washington, the two big games of the year, as an outsider looking at it, I'm saying those are two games that could have gone either way. If you're an Oregon fan, do you say, oh, my coach can't win the big game?
Well, if you're an Oregon fan, you don't say that right now. Maybe you say my coach has to prove he can win the big game. But if, you know, Dan Lanning's there for 10 years and the same result repeats over and over and over and over again, then, yeah, it's fair to say he can't win the big game. Now, there might be structural explanations for all of that, but it's a fair criticism. That's the other point about Steve's question. I think it's fair to ask it. It's fair to ask it the way he did. I'm even as somebody, again, who is reluctant to pull the trigger on saying like, oh, we need to rebuild and start over. I get why people are frustrated, and I do not blame them at all. I don't blame anyone who is more critical and has less patience for Franklin than I do for holding that position. I don't think it's illegitimate. I think it's valid. I respect it. I understand it. Again, I've said multiple times, I often find the act of defending James Franklin to be exhausting. At times, the way he comes across and the things he says in press conferences and the things he does, they frustrate me to no end. It makes he makes himself a tough guy to defend sometimes. So I get it.
Some of it is self-inflicted. And this is the argument that I will put out there, Chris, that is Ohio – I mentioned Washington, Oregon, Florida State last year had an undefeated season. Again, I understand the whole playoff situation and all that, but they didn't have to go up against an Ohio State or an Alabama or a Georgia. And Southeast Conference teams, if you look at their records against Alabama or against Georgia over in the last decade or so, Chris, you'll find records very comparable to where Penn State is against Ohio State. And I'll make the same argument there. Alabama and Georgia, year after year after year, have more talent than everybody else there, than LSU, than Tennessee, than any one of them, Chris. They have so much more talent. Yeah, you hope you could win a game, find a way to do it. But you are coming in to those games with much lesser talent. So I'm not sure the criticism of coaches having a 1-10 record against Kirby Smart or Nick Saban, I'm not sure how legitimate that criticism is.
Well, and when you go back and you look at the rare instances where one of those lesser teams has been able to get over on, let's say, an Alabama like Texas A&M or Tennessee, they blow it down the stretch. And so, you know, I guess in some ways being able to have that moment, like there's that iconic image of Neyland Stadium with all the smoke from the cigars, the post-game victory cigars after Tennessee beat Alabama, floating up into the night, lit by the stadium lights. I mean, I was actually down at the cheese shop in State College the day after that game happened, and a Tennessee fan came in. And the guy was practically floating. I mean, he had like a glow coming off of him. And I said, man, I remember that feeling. I would sure like to get that, touch that, experience that just once sometime soon, right? And you know, you have that and you can cherish that memory for life. But I mean, is it somewhat tarnished by the fact that Tennessee went out and just totally face planted right after that? They were set up to have an incredible season and they didn't because they lost down the stretch. So, and I would point to, you know, both coaching and roster talent as reasons why, Tennessee couldn't sustain the momentum after getting that big win over Alabama. Same thing with the Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M teams. So that's a factor too. It's not just can you win the game, it's then can you close the deal? And that's a big part of talent for sure.
And Penn State, and again, going to this Ohio State conversation, Chris, just looked it up. The last 12 years of Ohio State, that's Urban Meyer and Ryan Day's tenure there. Do you know how many times they lost more than one game in the Big Ten?
More than one in conference?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I mean, it can't be – I can't think of any off the top of my head. I wouldn't be shocked if it was zero.
It is zero.
Yeah.
Zero times. So when you create this, oh, James Franklin's record against Ohio State is so poor, guess what? Everybody's record against Ohio State is that poor. And I think you'd find the same thing if we did this for Alabama, if we did this for Georgia. So that made him over that tenure 93-7. Okay. In those 12 years, they lost 7 conference games only. Ryan Day himself is 38-3. His 3 losses, unfortunately for him, are the last 3 against Michigan. So, Chris, I give this argument a lot, and it feels like I'm an apologist for James Franklin, that he's losing to a superior team. I would be more critical of James Franklin, and you alluded to this early on when we started the show, losing some of those games, losing to Pitt in 2016, losing to Michigan State in back-to-back years, that loss to Minnesota in 2019. Chris, those are the losses that to me are unforgivable because
his crosses to bear, and those weigh down on him. When he loses the games, that it's more reasonable to say, okay, I can excuse losing to a team against whom you're an underdog, which has more talent than you. Although, again, Steve made a good point. Absolutely blown off the field frequently by Michigan. So you're not even in those games. And that's embarrassing. Inexcusable, really.
It is. And I feel like this past season was the first year I felt like it was a fair fight with those two teams. Penn State, even if they didn't recruit the same talent, they had equal talent on the field. All right, Chris, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of this conversation.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking about the big picture with Penn State and where they stand in the whole national picture. And I want to ask you this question, Chris. You've got a team in Penn State that's good, not great, or not elite, needing to make that changeover, to take that step. The fan base is getting a little restless with the head coach. I'm kind of telling the story, though, also of Michigan just a couple years ago.
Right.
So I think a lot of people will ask the question, well, if Michigan can do it, turn that corner, why can't Penn State? So I will ask that question, not just why can't Penn State do it, but how could Penn State do it? How do you do that when you are a Michigan and get to that higher level, even though you're not recruiting at the same level as Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State?
Well, again, part of it, under James Franklin, like we just can't fix. Like, you can't say to James Franklin, hey, become as good of an actual developer of talent and an in-game coach and manager of a program as Jim Harbaugh. Like, Jim Harbaugh is just better than James Franklin in all of those categories. And that's not a knock on James Franklin. Like, Jim Harbaugh, I think, almost certainly has some sort of, like, psychological disorder. And it's evidenced by the fact that he's won everywhere he's gone, and he's been run out of everywhere he was gone. He wears out his welcome. He's going to wear out his welcome with the Chargers eventually, although I do expect he'll do more winning than that organization is used to in the time that he's there. I do think, though, there is something to learn from Harbaugh's example in that I talked about it before. He knows how he wants to win, and he doesn't care as much about recruiting rankings as he does, I'm going to make sure I get the type of player I need to win to fit my system. And then we are just going to relentlessly develop those guys to do what I need them to do. So I want to go back, Jim, to this idea of percentage breakdown of what fault lies with the head coach what flaws are inherent to the institution or what mistakes does the institution make, and say who is responsible for getting us here. So, because I made some notes about how I would break it down. So let's start with James Franklin, okay, where I think you have to hold him accountable, and these are things that I think we can apply to him. Some are more easily fixed than others. So the first thing I have is just in-game coaching, specifically mistakes in those scenarios. Things like clock management, calling trick plays when it doesn't really make sense and they don't go well. In general, an uneven sense of how to do risk management in game, and occasionally questionable play calling. Of course, everybody's going to think about handing the ball to Miles Sanders on fourth down against Ohio State in 2018. And again, taking the ball out of Trace McSorley's hands a second time in the bowl game versus Kentucky that year. Hiring of assistants. He's done a lot of good things in this regard, but there have also been, you know, misses. The 1 year of Kirk Ciarrocca at offensive coordinator. Even though I don't think you can really blame him, the offensive coordinator situation in general, Mike Yurcich hiring did not work out, even though, again, I don't think you can blame him for that. I've said before that was the hot guy on the market. He just didn't fit. The wide receiver coach position has been an absolute disaster forever. Recruiting priorities, going back to how do you contrast him with Jim Harbaugh. I think there have been too many misses on blue chip guys. We decide we're going to go after the golden boys too often, and we lose out to the top programs you've talked about. I think maybe it would be better to have a more realistic understanding of how our reach and grasp are not necessarily lining up in that regard, and focus more on maybe identifying some diamond in the rough type players in our recruiting footprint. A failure or maybe a refusal to connect with our donors and boosters. I think there is this palpable sense that we have to act like Penn State football began in 2014. And that rubs a lot of the longtime followers of the program, the people with the money to spend, the wrong way. And why James can be so effective in a living room in recruiting a future player and his family, and then not apply that same psychology to how to, you know, softly manipulate the people with the big checkbooks, I don't understand, but clearly he hasn't done it. And again, at times I think his public communication has been lacking. I think especially in the last few years, he's come across as petulant at times. He seems to be unwilling to accept responsibility. That whole concept of the buck stops with me is something that I think he could be a little bit more forward-facing with, and it just exacerbates some of the issues he has with the media, with the fan base, and with the donors. So that's to start out where I would put some blame on Franklin. How do you react there?
I think you're right on a lot of those notes, Chris. You and I have talked about it both on the show and off the air. His ability or inability to connect with the major donors at Penn State. Here's a guy with a phenomenal personality who was so good at connecting with recruits and families that why don't we see more of that between him and the major donors? In this day and age of NIL, where we are right now, that's become even more important than it previously was. I also believe when you're coaching a team with less talent, Jim Harbaugh figured out how to win recruiting the level of player that he does. And I don't want to make it sound like, oh, he's got these, you know, two-star guys and right, turned them into national champions. But he has recruited more on the level where Penn State is rather than Ohio State. And he found the formula that would win. And maybe even part of that is just his ability on game day. If you recall that Michigan-Penn State game this year, Michigan found out very quickly if their quarterback drops straight back to pass, Chop Robinson's going to be in his face, okay? They made a decision. Wait a minute. Maybe we just need to run the ball and run the ball and run the ball, okay? It was a very unorthodox solution, but it was a solution. It was a game day. Well, perhaps they talked about this leading up to the game, I would think, and realized, okay, this is what we need to do to win this game. And we haven't seen that type of thing from James Franklin.
And now, look, and why could they do that? Because they didn't fear Penn State's offense. And that goes back to some of the things I talked about. The scheme did not strike fear into the heart of Michigan's defense. The wide receiving core was a disaster. That goes back to both development, the position coach, which has been a major problem for a long time. These things all go hand in hand, along with recruiting priorities. So, yeah, look, there's blame to be placed. There is no question.
Now, and maybe this was covered in what you said, but I'll add this about my criticism of James Franklin. I think sometimes he is formulaic in how he looks at the game, where it's, gee, the team with X number of explosive plays will win the game. So he coaches to get explosive plays, thinking that's the way you win. It's like this formula, as opposed to Michigan didn't say in that game, well, wait a minute, if we just run the ball, there's a good chance we're not going to have enough explosive plays to win. No, they figured out that game, that day, that was the strategy to win. And I don't think James Franklin necessarily does that. Now,
since you mentioned that, let me also bring up one thing I forgot to put on here, which is that he fixates way too much on irrelevant nonsense. Like, again, going back to the whole thing about, well, I can chart you how many explosive plays we have and how many explosive plays you need to have in order to win. I like that kind of stuff. I like, you know, quantitative analysis and applying benchmarks and metrics. I do also say, if you have to constantly remind me about how detail oriented you are, maybe you're not actually as detail oriented as you claim. So, like, I would like a little bit less fixation on what Mike Poorman wrote about him on statecollege.com or meddling in alumni trustee elections, and a little bit more attention on the problem areas I just charted at.
I agree. Now, let me ask the question the opposite way, which was the Institute. Can teams other than, or maybe I should phrase it this way, Chris, how do teams other than Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama, how do they win national championships?
Well, I want to.
So many schools, they're in the same boat as Penn State is. They are not one of those three schools. So what do they need to do to become one of those schools, or can they? Rutgers is never going to be a national championship football team.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to get into that. I want to get into the institutional side, because I think a lot of that is just kind of fixed. It's baked in. And that's why if my percentages vary so much from Steve's, I think a lot of it is just kind of built into the bones of the thing. But I do also want to make one other point about Franklin, as we're talking about him, and I'm thinking about this a little bit more. I think going back to that rough stretch Penn State experienced in the early 2000s, one of the reasons for that was that as Joe brought new people into the program, as opposed to the ones who have been part of Penn State football in the 70s and 80s, who were more peers and were able to push back against him and create a give and take in the coaching meetings, I think there were too many yes men who only knew the legend, right? Like, he was less a man and more a myth. And so Joe wasn't getting the pushback that he needed. And every leader needs that. Every leader needs somebody who can tell them no. You know, for the Star Wars fans out there, you know, George Lucas was best on the first two movies when he had Gary Kurtz there to tell him, like, no, George, don't make Han Solo a green frog monster. And so, you know, typically you earn that through a long period of success. But in James's case, and we'll talk about this in the next segment when we talk about institutional issues at Penn State, I think he's been allowed to surround himself with too many yes men. I don't think he has enough people in his orbit. And I'm guessing about this a little bit. I'm not using a ton of inside information here, but my impression is that he probably doesn't like to be told no. I think, you know, that's none of us do, really. And it's a challenge as a leader to be able to allow yourself to accept constructive criticism. But I think Pat Kraft coming to Penn State and could end up being a very good thing for James Franklin, because I think he's somebody with the wherewithal and the gravitas to push back and create some boundaries and create some dynamic tension. And Sandy Barber was not that. And we're going to talk about this a little bit. But again, I think James needs to be prepared to accept some more constructive criticism and have some people who can tell him no, some people who can say, hey, James, stop reading this stuff, that kind of thing.
All right, we'll pick it up from there when we come back in quarter four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. Chris, when we wrapped up, we were talking about how much of the responsibility is on James versus the Institute. I know we want to get to the Institute, but I wanted to follow up on something with you still on James Franklin. And Steve asked about James Franklin fatigue, and he was talking, I think, in terms of, you know, are the donors reaching the point where they're tired of the message from James? And by the way, I think a lot of coaches have – there's a time span that once you get past that point, people turn you off. They stop listening. But also, I think there's a point that James Franklin has reached. James Franklin's a really smart guy. Being a smart guy doesn't mean you always have the best ideas. Okay. The problem is you assume you do because you typically do. And if you've dealt with anyone who's successful somewhere else, you know, in the business world, there's the guy who makes lots of money. He makes widgets and does it very, very successfully. That doesn't mean he's the smartest guy when it comes to repairing your car, okay? And sometimes a certain arrogance comes with it. And I always remember, and I know it was said mostly in jest, but remember Joe Paterno's line, "We want your money, we don't want your 2 cents."
Yeah.
And the problem with that, he's probably right in that just because you have lots of money doesn't mean you're very smart about football. I'm the football coach. But that probably wasn't the right thing to say to donors who are used to having people, well, when you take my money, you get my 2 cents along with it. And I think James Franklin also in this era has to also realize that part of getting to donors is you have to swallow your pride a little bit. You're used to being on the football field with, you know, 85 football players. You're their coach. You decide who plays or not. You are, by mandate, the smartest guy there. It's your ideas that count. He's also going to have to be able to talk with people who are making lots of money, who are used to having their opinions heard and fleshed out. And I think he needs to be better at that. And maybe we're saying the same thing there, Chris, but I think he needs to worry about the important things off the field and not get distracted by those little things that offend him, like in the race for the Board of Trustees.
Sure. Well, and the other thing is, it's an institutional failure, and this is a nice way to pivot into that part of the conversation, because he shouldn't be set up to be the bad cop. I will tell you, to Steve's point, the donor fatigue is real, okay? The Franklin fatigue is absolutely out there. I'm not sure. That's probably the case at any school where a head coach is around for 10-plus years. It's pretty rare, and some of it just comes with, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. But I had a donor say to me this past week, and I thought it was a really good point, they're setting Franklin up to fail because he should be the good cop and they're making him be the bad cop, scolding donors for not giving enough. So let's talk about some of the things that are baked in at Penn State in terms of the institution. The first thing I look at is that he got here in the midst of the scandal. Okay. That's something that Penn State owns 100%. all of that baggage, including the self-inflicted wounds in the mistakes that we made as an institution and as a community in responding to that from day one onward. And when James got here, he had to learn about all of that and in many cases overcome it. And I think he deserves a ton of credit for largely having done so on and off the field to varying degrees. Another thing is leadership instability. James Franklin was hired by an interim president and an interim athletic director, both of whom are buffoons in my opinion, but even if you disagree, just the interim tag is an issue there. I mean, you can't get more unstable than, hey, I'm your boss, but like not really because my job's kind of fake. Then they replaced Rodney Erickson and David Joyner with Eric Barron and Sandy Barber. And when I go back to my point about yes men, I think, you know, Eric Barron, you can talk about his tenure as president of Penn State. And I think there were some good things and some bad things. I don't think he ever really understood the direction that big time college sports was going or fully grasped its role in the overall mission and success of Penn State. Sandy Barber, I think, again, is somebody who shared some of James's faults, frankly. I think both of them were trying to compensate for a deep-seated insecurity about themselves and overcompensated for it with arrogance in ways that, you know, both hurt the program and turned off the people who might have given some big checks to help turn things around. And so you had two people in key oversight positions over James Franklin through a lot of his tenure here, who I think were setting him up for failure versus success. Just generally at Penn State, there's a lack of willingness to spend at the levels that match the top teams we're chasing. And I don't even say that in a derogatory way. To me, that's a feature, not a bug. But the institutional culture is not one of blowing the lid off spending-wise to compete in football. There are built-in recruiting obstacles here, like just the overall history of the program is great, but it doesn't quite match the programs we're chasing. Our physical location, again, our brand strength is unbelievable, but it's top 15, not top five. You know, facilities are a big part of that, and that goes back to how willing are you to prioritize football uber alles from a spending perspective, and scruples, too. We're just not willing to do some things that the programs we have chased have been willing to do under the table. It's hard to win at Penn State. And now, you know, the fan base has its own issues too. The expectations don't match the means and the willingness to give. In general, there's a bad culture of giving to athletics at Penn State. There is the Paterno divide. I think it's maybe people make a little bit more out of it. And the ones who do emphasize it maybe don't talk about it in the right way. But it's always hard to follow a legend. And the scandal complicated that further. So those are all institutional obstacles that aren't going to go away for James Franklin or anyone who would replace him.
They are all part of it. So let's get to this, you know, Steve's final point about continuing to fall further behind until a new coach comes, ideally someone who could unify the fan base over Paterno. Let me address going to the extreme. I think Greg Schiano is a very good coach, and he's maxing out what could be done at Rutgers. Is there going to be a point where Rutgers fans are going to say, hey, wait a minute, we max out at 8 wins. Why aren't we going for the 10, 11, 12 win? We need a new coach to do that. Now, I know Penn State is higher up in the pecking order than Rutgers is. However, is there someone – is there even this mythical person who could unite the fan base? Would being able to bring the Paterno fans back in fix NIL? I know a lot of people will say there's guys out there who would give if you recognize Joe Paterno. Call up Paterno Field and you'll be rolling in money. But will you also tick off some people who say, hey, wait a minute, you're just going into more controversy there? I guess the question is there truly a ceiling there that James Franklin is incapable of reaching, but another person might be able to reach, Chris?
Well, yeah, that's a slightly different and more complicated conversation than we have time for. But I will just say, like, yeah, there is money sitting on the sidelines that could probably be opened up by reconciling on the history of the program a little bit more.
That would be helpful, but can you unite it? And by the way, being at Penn State, there's the fan base, the donors are a little bit prickly to understand. And some of this, when a non-Penn Stater comes in, I think they missed the mark. I've probably talked about this before. I was in Sandy Barber's presence at one point, and where she talked about fixing the Penn State culture as if that was her mandate coming in from outside. And I believe she offended every person who was there who had the Penn State pride and said, no, no, we don't need our culture fixed.
Yeah, as I said, Sandy Barber, as I think about it and look back on her tenure, I think she was probably the absolute worst boss James Franklin could have possibly had during the time where he was trying to build the program up post 2016-17, because she was somebody who I view as kind of an enabler of his worst qualities, who fueled his bad side instead of challenging him to minimize that and grow and leverage the things he does well to do better. I mean, she was like an AA sponsor. She would have been like secretly sneaking drinks on the side and invited him out to go out to a bar. I do think, and we as Penn State, we've got to own that. You know, we pick our presidents, we hire our athletic directors. Now, I think we're in a better situation now, but we're trying to account for a deficit that was of our own creation.
So, Chris, let's wrap this up. Steve, his premise, I think, all along here is James Franklin's not the right guy to get us to the next level. Is that accurate? And if it is accurate, is there another way for us to go about getting to the next level?
Well, I think if you look at the overall history of the program, no matter how great it is, I think you can realistically take away the lesson that the next level for Penn State is incredibly elusive. And I think, unfortunately, that's more a Penn State problem than it is a head coach or a James Franklin problem. So, again, I'm on record as saying I think it's probably unlikely that James Franklin's going to win a national championship at Penn State. But I think the odds of just generic Penn State winning a national championship are pretty close. So, again, it's a larger conversation, but I see no reason at this point to not stick with what we've got in the known commodity.
And, Chris, I'm also very curious because it's a new world starting this year. It's a new world where you're not in a division with Ohio State and Michigan. It's also a new world where 12 teams make the playoffs. And this will be a conversation I suspect we'll have next year. You know, is making the playoffs and winning a game enough? Is getting to the semifinals enough? What is enough? But the conversation will be much different this year because the rules are completely changed. It's a new Big Ten. It's a new national playoff situation. It's all new, Chris. And we will, I'm sure, talk about it more before this upcoming season. That's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.